Inside Books with Breda Brown.
Welcome to Inside Books, a programme about the magical world of writing. I'm Breda Brown, and in each episode of Inside Books, we chat to people associated with the world of books, including well-known authors, publishers, editors, agents, critics, booksellers, and more. You'll find Inside Books on all audio platforms, and our Twitter handle is at InsideBooksIRE, where you'll also find lots of other interesting books news. My guest today is Amanda Geard, an Australian author who now lives in Kerry. Before becoming a writer, she was an exploration geologist, a job which saw her travel and live all over the world. This nomadic lifestyle led to her living on a houseboat in London, a Norwegian island, before travelling on a holiday that led her to settle in Kerry 8 years ago. She began writing after she moved to Kerry, and her first short story won the New Irish Writing Award in 2019. Her debut novel, The Midnight House, was published shortly afterwards and was a Richard and Judy book club favourite, and her second novel, The Moongate, is out now. She's currently doing a teaching internship at the University of Galway's BA in Creative Writing and working on book three. Now, Amanda, you've travelled all over the world, but it was Kerry where you now live that actually inspired you to write.
It did, Breda. Thanks for having me on. Kerry, God, it's a magic place. My husband and I came here 8 years ago. We rented a little sort of go-kart and went around the ring of Kerry. And we were sort of coming down a hill near or after Waterville, coming down into Castle Cove, and saw this old house that was sort of had this sign out the front, a for sale sign, and it was tilted on its side and the letters were tumbling down into the ground. You know, it had been there for so long. And one of us, I don't even remember who, called the number. And we ended up viewing this house, sort of falling through the floor and having a look and thinking, could we do this? And in the end, we bought it and renovated it, stayed. So it was a holiday that turned into much more.
A spur of the moment decision, though.
Very spur of the moment.
No regrets?
No regrets.
How long did it take to do up the house to make it livable?
About 5 years. No weekends, no holidays. We did a lot of it ourselves, and we had local help as well. And it, the house was built in 1823, and a family bought it from the area, bought it in the 1890s, and actually their granddaughter lived next door. So we had this whole, we had sort of this verbal history of the house. There weren't many photos, but lots of stories. And I remember going in, someone asked me, because I write multi-timeline books and they don't have any sort of ghosts in them. But sometimes people see the covers and wonder, they said, oh, did you walk into the house and get any feelings? And I said, well, it felt warm, it felt nice. And the neighbour came over and said, yeah, it was always a warm, happy house. So we loved it. We had a great time renovating it there, and sort of the community in Kerry really lifted us.
And interesting, having read your books, I can see now how that absolutely influenced the stories that you tell now, you know? But it was a trip to Listowel Writers Week then that actually got you writing.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in, it was 2019. I was in a pub, I think, in Kenmare, probably had one or two or more drinks. And I saw a flyer for Writers Week. And as a geologist, I was like, but always had been interested in writing. I thought, God, what is a writer's week or a writer's festival? Anyway, I sort of made a commitment to go. So the next day I threw some bags in the car for Audi because, you know, we're quite far from anywhere. I thought, well, at least I can go to the supermarket if it doesn't suit me. But we drove up to Listowel, and I went and saw Patricia O'Reilly launch her book, The First Rose of Tralee. And she was fantastic. And someone in the audience, a woman, she looked lovely woman, looked normal like me. And she put up her hand and said that an agent had been interested in her manuscript. And I sort of did a double take and thought, oh, this woman's written a manuscript. And between Patricia and this woman whose name I don't know and will never find out, I was really inspired to go home and start writing my own book.
And you hadn't been writing creatively before that, had you?
No, I hadn't. I'd written a few articles about the exploration geology, and I always enjoyed writing, and I loved it at school, and always chose sort of the creative writing sort of angles at school.
So you went home after going to Listowel Writers Week, you sat down, and did you have any idea, or was that a case of you looked around the house and went, okay, maybe there's something in the house, and that's where it came from?
Definitely. Sort of the walls, it's very, maybe it's a bit cliched, but obviously the walls do whisper a bit because there's always
No, they
stories.
don't, Amanda. You're only making that up.
There was always stories, and the attic had been, the roof had been redone actually in the 90s, but some of the old joists had gone back in. And when we were, there was old wiring everywhere, and we had to pull it up. And we found a piece of timber up there, which had some pencil writing on it saying, "When this comes down, pray for me, Tim O'Shea, 1911." And it was this amazing sort of message from the past. And we went off to our neighbor who lived there, and she, of course, knew the family, and we returned the message. And it was a wonderful moment. And that's, I guess, where the idea of a character finding an old letter in a book, slightly different thing, but a message from the past that she then wanted to chase up.
So, what did you do then? Did you plot? What happened?
I did. That night I got home from Listowel, I pulled down a load of books from the shelf, and I really sat down and almost studied the books, the science of fiction rather than science fiction, and tried to look at how they were put together and how the characters, how the mood, how it felt, and what the themes were. And I would always say to people who wanted to start writing that I think the best thing to do is to read the types of books you want to write rather than reading all those books that tell you about writing, because that's where you learn how a book should feel. And so I did that, and I actually planned the first book, The Midnight House, very very I was very regimented in the plan and had Excel sheets and everything. But of course it went completely awry as I started to write.
And just I'm amused by the fact that your science background came into this, because when you were looking at those other books and you were sort of pulling them apart and looking at the timelines and all the rest, you were putting all that into a spreadsheet and looking at how it worked. So what did you learn though from that process?
Well, I learned I sort of I learned mostly about the structure, the way in which so both my books so far have three timelines, and I saw that it was possible to jump between these timelines and link them together, by using place or a character or an item or a letter. And I found that as I went through and tabbed, the first few I tabbed, put little plastic tabs on all of the chapters and really pulled them apart to see how they linked and how it was possible to read so many timelines without getting lost. And yeah, I typed those out into Excel, and I saw a bit of a pattern that basically you can do anything you want as long as you link those chapters with, as I said, a place or an item or a letter or a person. And that just means that the reader feels, or as I as a reader, feel really in really good hands as I go through these complicated plots and novels.
So did that help or hinder then the creative process when it came to you writing? Like, did you feel at points that you put too much focus on that formula and you should have been more creative, or did it actually really help?
I think for the first one, it really helped because I wasn't, there was no pressure. I was just sort of sat down and wrote it to my plan, even though it did change a little as I went along. And then for the second one, I did feel a bit of pressure, and I know that some of your guests have said they didn't have the second novel syndrome, and it doesn't exist, but it definitely exists. And
Why?
I
What
found,
happened?
it was such an experience. I planned the Moon Get Out really thoroughly, and thought, oh, this is going to be great. But I got to writing the setting in Tasmania. I have a setting in Kerry, and the rest was set in Tasmania in the 40s and the modern day. And I found that even though I grew up in Tasmania, I didn't know a lot about the home front, and the research was really difficult because whilst you can go and read about the Blitz until the cows come home, there's very little about the Australian home front during the war. So I was doing a lot of research for that, and I found that the modern day, I was too close to it because I'd set it in 2005 and I'd lived there then. And of course, you write what you know, but it didn't quite feel right. So I actually stripped that timeline out and did a two timeline novel. But at the end, it didn't feel right either. So I ended up writing the modern day, which is set in London, where I have lived as well, and layering that over the top. So it was a huge process. It was a really big process.
So you had finished the novel, really, and then you went back and added in a whole extra piece.
Yeah, and it was funny because when I sent it to my editor with the two timelines, they knew there was something missing because the third timeline was in my head. What I had wanted the modern character to discover was in my head the whole time, and it was missing from the book. And that sounds totally bizarre, but it worked with two timelines, but I knew there was something missing and my editor did. So it's a very strange thing when you build these several timeline novels, you really do layer things and you can pull things out, but if you pull too much out, it's a bit like Jenga and I think the structure just tumbles, and it had tumbled, I think.
And just to go back then, I suppose, in terms of publication, so how did you go about the publication of the first book?
So I, when I was pulling all those books off the shelf and tabbing them and studying the science fiction, I bought the writer's and artist's yearbook and had a look through. And I read somewhere, maybe on a blog somewhere, that you should try and have a list of your preferred agents before you start writing even. And there was a book by Lorna Cook that was at the top of the Kindle charts at that time. And it was going so well. And it was sort of in the genre. And so I read that. And at the end, the name Rebecca Ritchie came up as an agent. And I read some books by Jenny Ashcroft, and Becky Ritchie's name came up. And I read a book by Kate Riordan, and there was Becky Ritchie's name. So number one, I put Becky Ritchie, and I had two or three other agents, and I sent out the manuscript to those four agents in the end, and the others didn't want it, but Becky took it. So I don't know whether it was serendipity or what, but it was really great to write with an agent in mind. So that I would recommend doing that to anyone just starting.
And especially as she represented some of the other authors that you already admired, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
So what happened at that point? Did you have a fairly good manuscript to give her? Was it finished, or what happened?
It was finished. So I sent it out as it was. I'd actually sent it to, I won a manuscript assessment on Twitter in an auction for a charity. So I sent it off to someone, and she said, this should really be one timeline and another person's story. And I thought, oh my God. And she also said, as you're a journalist, I'm sure you can take the criticism. And I was like, I'm not a journalist.
I'm a geologist.
And I thought, oh my God. And I sent it to a friend who owned a bookshop, Middleton Books, Jess. And she read it. She said, just send it off. It's great. And so I sent it off to the agents and got Becky as my agent. So I thought it was going to be a disaster, but it turned out well. But of course, there was 6 months of editing, and I had to lose a lot of characters and quite a lot of complexity and a lot of words, as happened with the second one as well. So it was a long process, but I did kind of stick to my guns on sending it out, even though I'd had a bit of negative feedback.
And you got a two-book deal then with Headline, was that it?
I did, yes. Yep, it was great. I wanted a two-book deal because I'm much better with deadlines. Otherwise, I tend to procrastinate.
And it was the first one was a Richard and Judy book club pick. How did that happen?
I don't actually know, because I had an email from Becky Ritchie, my agent, and she said, I've got something to tell you. And she never writes sort of the emails, I've got something to tell you. And I said to my husband, oh, I bet it's Richard and Judy calling. And we laughed, obviously, it was a big joke. And and so she called and she said, yes, it's been picked for the Rich and Judy book club. And I mean, I laughed, but also sort of cried a bit. Mm-hmm. Because didn't think at all it was happening. So my publisher actually put it in, and I had no idea. I'd sent some extra details about the background to the story, but I didn't know what it was for. I just thought it was sort of for publicity packs. But it was as a part of the kind of process to get it through the readers and then all into the hands of Rich and Judy. So it was a massive stroke of luck, and I'm really grateful, obviously, to the publisher and to Rich and Judy, because it's been wonderful.
Did it have an impact on sales?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think it did, because the book was... it's hard to know. I don't actually ask much about sales. I just let it happen. So, but I mean, I'd say it was selling okay in ebook, but with Rich and Judy, there's a real push for the paperback, and it actually is announced on the day the paperback comes out. So, I don't know how it would have sold, but I know it sold a lot more books because of the book club.
Then moving on, as you said, to the second book, and that was difficult. It was like playing Jenga and pulling bits out and pushing things back in. But you got there in the end. But did that impact on your confidence at all?
I think at the time it did. And I actually went back to Tasmania to visit Mum when I had to write this modern timeline back over the top. And I was quite busy, and there was a deadline looming. And as usual, I found it just much better to just, I had to get it done. So there was, now I've started book three, of course, I'm totally wrecked with self-doubt again. But if there's a tight deadline, you just have to get to the end and then fix everything later. So, so yes, it was tough. And I definitely found it very tough, but at least once I had something, I could edit, and that's what I'd always say, and need to give myself the advice again, is to get whatever you can down on paper. And I find it really difficult to mold something that isn't there in the first place. Only once you've kind of made the bricks can you build the wall.
And with book three now, how is that going?
It is. I have a solid outline. Like,
oh, thank God.
And I'm deviating already, which is, annoying. but it's good. I'm setting it. Well, touch wood, it all gets there. But I have a setting in occupied Norway, and we used to live up in northern Norway on an island in the Arctic. So I'm taking a sort of fictional setting and setting it during the war up there. And I love writing about place, so I'm really enjoying that. And I'm twinning that again with a Kerry setting.
So is it the same again with the multiple timelines as well?
It is. Yes. It'll, if anyone out there liked the other two, this one, though, I hope if it gets there, hopefully they'll enjoy it.
I love as well that there's also, though, a mystery embedded in your plot. Like, that just, I love it. It works really well.
Yes, it's good. There's a hook in this new one, and a mystery that I hope, that I hope will be, people will ponder over as they read. But yeah, I love that idea of the mystery, but also transporting people to a new place that, in time or in space that they haven't been before.
You know, you're only writing for 4 years and you're on book three. Like, that's quite a fast pace.
I'm always amazed, though, at writers, in awe of writers that write a book a year or two books a year. Some out there write even more. And I think this next book will be, there's going to be a little bit more of a gap through to publishing book three. I definitely like to have a deadline and a time that I have to get something done by. So, yes, it's been quite quick, but of course the process before I started and before Becky was involved felt like a long time, I have to say.
And are you writing full time at the moment, or are you working still as a geologist?
No, I'm still working. So I normally get up quite early and often write in bed.
In
with
bed?
The laptop on the knee. Very lucky. And so a coffee or four. And I'm not so good at night, but I'm reading a lot of, doing a lot of research for Occupied Norway and using a lot of Google Translate, because again, there's not much in English, but we do have Norwegian friends that are helping out. And the research is a challenging one, because it's so interesting that you have to at some point put it aside and say, that's enough. The book isn't about Occupied Norway. It's about these three characters,
And you've been quite successful as well in applying for various funding programmes. Was that a deliberate route that you wanted to go down to try and help the writing?
No, not at all deliberate. But Twitter's been amazing. So I've been, since I started writing, I set up a Twitter account and, you know, I found that I've met, I don't know any, I know a handful of writers. And that was one of the reasons I applied for the Evolution Programme with the Irish Writers' Centre, because I wanted to meet some other writers, you know, in real life. And that was how the teaching internship in Galway came about with that. So I found that so useful, and the program's finished now, and I would encourage anyone listening to apply for the next one that's coming up next year. So no, it wasn't deliberate, but I do keep an eye on Twitter, sort of what's coming up or opportunities or chances to connect with people or book launches. And I, you know, if certainly Listowel Writers Week I went to this year, and you know, if there's any nearby festivals, I'll go to them, because it is sort of lonely enough process sitting and writing all the time. And I've found the Irish writing community to be just utterly amazing. They're just amazing, every single one of them, you know, supportive, and there's a really good community there.
And with the Evolution Programme as well, with the Irish Writers' Centre, I mean, you were there with some other great writers who have already been published as well. Angela Flannery, Debbie McClune, Fiona Sherlock, Stephanie Conn, loads of them. So, and, you know, part of that programme is to get that collaboration and support and be able to bounce off each other. And did you find that's what happened?
Oh, it was brilliant. And we have a WhatsApp group that, you know, even things came, the program's finished, but things were pinging through yesterday.
And go on, read us what the last WhatsApp message in there was.
What stays in that WhatsApp group? Oh, it's been amazing. Angela Flannery, of course, who's The Amusements was won the Irish Novel of the Year there in Listowel. Just seeing the people I went through the program with reach such heights is really inspiring, and there's a lot of support there. So, and actually, on the question of sort of funding and things, I applied for that program, and people often get in touch to ask about applying for the next program, and I love to sort of pay that forward. But you know, today I got an email. I applied for a residency here in Kerry and didn't get it, and you know, so I'm always applying for things, and there's lots of rejections as well, and it's a bit like sending out your manuscript. There's always going to be rejections, but you kind of just have to keep applying and keep looking for the opportunities, and then, you know, every so often the stars align and something goes right.
But this is it. If you're not in, you can't win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And just to go back as well before we finish up, this teaching internship in the University of Galway, what does that involve?
So it was it's actually finished now. So Angela and one other student from the course, we went to Galway once a week and taught a couple of hours there with the first years doing creative writing. And the other, you know, Angela and Alice, they were teaching sort of literary fiction and some, you know, some non-fiction. And I really went in with the idea to talk about commercial fiction. And I planned 10 lessons. And the first one, I was so terrified that my palms were sweating. And all these students sort of sat in front of you. But I went through essentially my process of how I'd started to plan the book, and I even talked to them about agents and what I did and some of the things we've talked about today, and made up some writing lessons. And by the third lesson, you move to a group. So it's sort of three rounds of three lessons. By lesson seven, I felt pretty confident going into that third round again, and just seeing the talent of the students was pretty humbling, I have to say. So they were brilliant, and that's something I think they're doing again with the Evolution Programme, so worth applying for.
Brilliant. Well, Amanda Geard, get back to writing book three, please, because we want to see it very, very soon. Thank you for joining us here on Inside Books. And you'll find all of Amanda's books online or at your local bookshop now. The next episode of Inside Books will be out soon. Just keep an eye on our Twitter feed for details. The handle is at Inside Books IRE. Inside Books is a unique media production with research by Nicola Fitzsimons. And if you'd like to hear other episodes, just search for us on the various audio platforms. And don't forget to leave us a rating or review. I'm Breida Brown. Until next time, keep reading.
Inside Books is a unique media production.